Hi, I'm Diane Johnston, a financial advisor with UBS Financial Services. I work in the Jericho, New York office, and I can be reached at 516-745-8964. If you have any questions about today's episode, please don't hesitate to reach out. But before we jump into Winged and Ready, I wanted to share a poem with you that my guest, Amy Freitag, who's not affiliated with UBS and her opinions are her own, and I thought would be wonderful to share and tee up the sentiment for today's episode on Winged and Ready. This poem is called One in a Million, and it was written by a student, Eileen Miranda. If you would like a copy of this poem, it can be found in the 2022 annual report for the New York Community Trust, and I'm sure the New York Community Trust would also be very happy to share it with you. So here's an excerpt from Eileen's poem. New York unique, unique New York. The romanticized comedies light up foreigners' hearts. The chances of meeting someone, one in a million. Yet we come see Lady Liberty wishing on luck. You could find your next employer on an elevator ride, meet the love of your life in a cafe, trip on the street and see your best friend. The city is large, but the world is small. Enjoy today's episode. Hi, and welcome back to Winged and Ready. I am so stoked to be sitting here today with Amy Freitag, the president of the New York Community Trust. So buckle in, we're gonna be talking a lot about community, charity, and how awesome New York City is. And I couldn't be more thrilled to have her sitting with me in studio. Amy, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Oh, well, first of all, what a fun thing to get to do today. So thank you so much for having me. I am the fourth president of the New York Community Trust, which is celebrating 100 years this year. Ooh. So no small feat. I have been in New York for several decades. Prior to running the trust, I was running a family foundation here in New York City, an 80-year-old family foundation that had been based here throughout its whole history. And then prior to that, I ran several nonprofits, including Bette Midler's New York Restoration Project, and participated in the Million Trees campaign.
Cool.
And then prior to that, I worked as a deputy commissioner for capital projects for the New York City Parks Department during the Bloomberg administration, which,
wow,
as you know, was the moment of birth for the High Line, Brooklyn Bridge Park, the restoration of Washington Square. So a glory time to work for the city, for sure. So
you don't have any New York pride whatsoever.
I'm a simple girl from Akron, Ohio that just got lucky to spend her career in New York City. So
that's amazing. So you can share a tagline that I love to say: I'm half Midwestern, I don't have a mean bone in my body.
I think, and this theory has been shared with others, including Dan Doktoroff, the amazing deputy mayor in the Bloomberg administration, and others, that Midwesterners get to New York City and they go crazy. And I like to think that there's been a lot of fun and a lot of excitement in being here and being able to participate in all kinds of different activities in the city. So it's been a real honor for me.
That's incredible. And you are the fourth president in 100 years. You're not standing on the shoulders of any giants.
Right, right. Well, interestingly, the first president of the New York Community Trust came from Cleveland. He was actually, the Cleveland Foundation is the original community foundation on which we are all modeled. And he, Ralph Hayes, ran the Cleveland Foundation, and a bunch of New Yorkers came to Cleveland to see what was going on with the Cleveland Foundation. And they not only replicated the Cleveland Foundation here in New York City, but they took the president and brought him here as well. And he served in the role for 40 years.
That's incredible.
So he got us off to a nice long tenured start.
And that's a really good opportunity for me to ask you, what is a community trust? What is a community foundation?
Right. So I think this is like such a critical question, because whereas there are 800 community foundations across the country in rural places, urban places, some represent whole states, some just a county. These are a very different and very American and very special form of philanthropy. So most people think of philanthropy or private philanthropy as like something like the Ford Foundation, mm-hmm, where all of the funding came from an extraordinary business or an extraordinarily generous person like the Rockefeller Foundation. A community trust or community foundation is actually this incredible conglomeration of all kinds of individuals who are generous. So we like to think we're like a crazy quilt of generosity, and each patch represents a different donor's gift to our, in our case, eight counties. We serve Westchester to the east end of Long Island and the five boroughs. So we are made up of literally hundreds and hundreds of individual funds that come together to do all kinds of good in the eight counties we serve.
So what I'm hearing is you don't have to be a Rockefeller to give and to give to the community.
Exactly. So one of my favorite stories is Harry Rogers, who was a cab driver in New York City for decades and decades. And he and his wife left an incredibly generous fund to plant trees in all five boroughs. So literally a cab driver, and we literally have the funds of the Rockefellers and Schiffs. Not all of them, but members of those families. So it's sort of the full gamut, from the extraordinary sort of builders of New York to the people that, you know, love the city and worked in every kind of, we have funds from accountants, we have funds from people that just had all kinds of different life journeys in New York City, and that's expressed in the way that they left the funds to us for what purposes they wanted the funds to be put to after their days walking in New York City.
So. Well, that's incredible. Thank you to Mr. and Mrs. Rogers for starting that and showing that even a cab driver can leave a legacy.
Absolutely.
So you don't have to be a bajillionaire
right.
to participate in the New York Community Trust.
That's, and I think that that's one of the misnomers about community philanthropy, that you know, you have to have $1 million to open a fund. Mm. And in fact, one of my favorite stories is about a wonderful donor who came to the trust early on in her career, and all she had to give at that time was appreciated stock.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't have a lot of stock. So as she said to me at one point, she said, "Amy, when I first started working with the trust, none of my gifts came with commas." they were in the hundreds of dollars, not in the thousands of dollars. Well, fast forward decades later, she now gives gifts with commas in them, which is very generous. But her point was that what was wonderful about the New York Community Trust is that when she came to the trust in those early days, she was given all the help and all the support and, quite frankly, all the respect that you would expect we would give to $1 million donor. Mm-hmm. And she was so touched by the fact that we were so supportive. And I think that's really our aim, is to make everyone feel like they have a role that they can play at the New York Community Trust.
The word community, bold, underline, exclamation points around it. It's a true community, and there's the support. You have the staff to support everybody. So you're able to give donors like that the help and the aid that they need to get started.
Well, it's not only do we do this work with donors, but what I love about a community foundation, there are really two parts to the mission, right? We take in and we steward these charitable dollars, and then we turn them into grants.
Mm.
So what's great for donors who work with the New York Community Trust is that they can be assured that on any subject matter they're interested in the eight counties that we serve, over these 100 years, we have made a grant for that. And we have a whole team of extraordinary grant makers who are true subject matter experts who really help us to make the most impactful grants possible.
Mm-hmm.
And we can give that advice to our donors. So it's a really rich resource, and we try to make those resources available to folks through our newsletters, through Zoom rooms, through meetings and conferences and opportunities to learn. So it's truly a community of learning and sharing and generosity, which is what makes it such a cool place to work.
That's super cool. And you'd mention all of the interests. I'm sure I would have to talk like an auctioneer and we would run out of time for me to get through all of the interests. But can you highlight a couple of them that people gravitate towards and or even people might not know actually exists?
Wow. Well, I like to say we give grants from everything from cats to cancer, from climate to, let's see, homelessness, housing. Right now, we're thinking a lot about immigration.
Okay.
And as you know, 180,000 immigrants have moved through our region since spring of 2022.
That's incredible.
Which is just, you know, New York is a great immigration story, and this is just the latest chapter of that incredible story. But clearly, it's put a lot of stress on not just the five boroughs, but the eight counties we serve. And now there are immigrants that are trying to make their way to other parts of New York State and across the country. So finding a way to bring donors together so that we can support this extraordinary moment for our city and our region. So just yesterday, we announced a new partnership with Robinhood, the city, the comptroller, and the state, and the partnership for New York to really try to galvanize folks around how can we help these folks that are coming, our newest New Yorkers, have the most successful launching moment in our region as possible. So we think about those urgent needs. Certainly when COVID struck, we pulled together an $80 million fund to get grants out the door really within weeks of the city and state's closure. So, you know, we can be very impactful after Superstorm Sandy or 9/11 or COVID or now for the migration moment for New York City. But then we have just people who are loving doing the work of environmental conservation. We have certain donors that are completely focused around hunger. There's a wonderful couple that we work with that have for years focused on hunger on the Upper West Side. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, they were just making grants to their local food bank. And then what we found was that they really got excited about the work we were doing in some of our own grant making around hunger, and decided that they would make a partnership with our program team to make even more grants and more, you know, a little bit more nuanced grants. I think sometimes people really want to address the urgent need of feeding the hungry person. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the upstream issues that are causing the hunger? Are there ways that we can intervene earlier in the cycle so that we can prevent somebody cycling into that sort of food insecurity? So we have people that are passionate about that. We also do a lot of grant making around health and well-being. We have one of my favorite stories. I could go on. You're going to have to stop me, Diane. One of my favorite stories is when the AIDS crisis broke out in the late 70s, early 80s. We had had a fund established as early as the 1940s for the research of blood diseases. And I remember, I was in the city at that time, and I remember how sort of radioactive the whole AIDS crisis was for philanthropy. There was a lot of, you know, discomfort around the disease, a lot of fear. But the New York Community Trust was able to deploy that fund that had been left to us decades before, and we did some of the first research grants for AIDS research in New York City. So super proud of the sort of legacy of impact we've been able to have over these 100 years that we'll be celebrating this year in our centennial.
I literally have goosebumps from head to toe listening to that story. That's incredible that something was set up in the 40s and was able to usher in significant aid through research during a galvanizing and super sad time in the city. That's absolutely incredible. I want to hit the rewind button a little bit more on how someone can get involved, because you don't have to be super wealthy. You don't have to have commas in your donation, but it does feel a little bit different than going online and making a donation to American Red Cross, for example. Can we talk about the look and feel and how that works?
Sure. I'd say if in two broad buckets. Our funds fall into two broad buckets. The first would be what we would call the permanent fund. Mm-hmm. So I'll use my mother as an example, who passed away a couple of years ago. She left in her will. Oh, she was just a happy, wonderful person. She had a great life. This is a happy story. But, you know, she really wanted to leave certain funds in her as her legacy for our hometown. And she left a permanent fund for, you know, the betterment of our hometown. We hold those types of funds. Mm-hmm. So that somebody like Harry Rogers, a cab driver, who did not have children, wanted to give back to the city that he loved. So in his will, he left direction to leave these funds for permanent charitable purpose at the New York Community Trust.
So that's important.
That's one sort of fund. And those are the kinds of funds that over time can be incredibly important because they grow and grow and grow. And I can give you great examples of that.
And to hit the pause button on that for a moment, because you hit on something important, that's legacy. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people confuse legacy with the need to have a spouse or the need to have children or to have a human being that they're tied to leave something towards. But that permanent fund really allows anybody to leave a legacy. You don't have to be married. You don't have to have children.
Right. And we, you know, what I love about our institution is that we have proved over 100 years how seriously we take donor intent. And when I tell you seriously, we take every single word of every single will that's directs funds in our direction, and we really honor those. And in fact, we go back and check ourselves on a fairly regular basis. Are we doing exactly what Harry Rogers asked? So often someone will say, I want to leave my money for this cause and that cause. We are dutiful about making literally 50% for one cause and 50% for the other cause. And we will go back and test ourselves to make sure we're doing that. And in the case of sort of permanent bequests, things change over time. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of the strengths of a community foundation. Let's say that your grandmother left money to the charitable hospital where her children were born. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in this modern day, charitable hospitals have often merged with for-profit institutions mm-hmm. and have really morphed yeah. and changed. So what we can do is what we call vary the fund over time so that we can make sure the same population is served even if that institution no longer exists. So in that case, we might find the federally qualified health clinic that serves that exact neighborhood that you wanted to serve and make those grants to that institution. So community foundations, by giving your permanent funds to a community foundation, you are basically directing a community of staff to honor your wishes in perpetuity. And there are very few things that you can do with that kind of certainty
yeah.
that your wishes will be followed. And it's something I'm really proud of at the New York Community Trust, the duty of care we put into those funds.
And that's incredible that there's really time-tested intent that you're able to make sure and have that permanent fund morph as time changes or sectors change or industries change, that the intent can stay intact.
Yeah, and I think we all forget, like in 100 years, things really change, right? So we have, it's interesting, we have a lot of funds that were set aside for leprosy.
Yeah.
And we still have actually opportunities to use those funds. But you can imagine the medical landscape has shifted seismically
yeah.
over the time since those funds were left. So what we always try to encourage donors is to give a little flexibility so the community foundation can always optimize your funds for the moment of need. We do have a fund set aside for injured aging ballerinas therapy.
Mm.
Now, if you see any injured aging ballerinas, say on your way home, you might want to direct them to us because they're not always easy to find. So sometimes a fund that's that restrictive is a little bit harder to program. So that's why we always encourage folks to be a little flexible in their gifts
yeah,
to the trust.
Absolutely. Maybe I'll do a pirouette. I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
Well, I also think how cool it would be to go through that exercise. What an amazing values exercise to work with the New York Community Trust staff to really think, what would my intent be? What would I want to leave a permanent legacy to? That can really have a lot of implications in other things that you do with your finances and your wealth. It can really help shape a whole picture. So you're helping not only a community, but you're helping yourself in your own plans.
And we work a lot with wealth advisors and trust and estate lawyers. And what we like to be is a really good partner to those professionals, because I think we can often create really effective solutions for folks that are going through those mm-hmm. those value exercises, those planning yeah. exercises. And I think we're very, very good and very, very creative at working in a way that really meets the donor's needs. You know, it's interesting. I think this power of permanence is something that is so special. And I guess it's sometimes because it's related to end of life stuff that people get a little creeped out by it. But when you hear some of the stories of what has been done through these permanent funds, and can I tell you my favorite story?
Yes.
So,
no, I'm kidding.
Okay, all right, fine. So if it was 1920 and you were a fan of theater, and by the way, think about theater then. That's really before moving pictures mm-hmm. were the thing.
Right.
The most famous actor in the world was a guy named David Warfield. And not surprisingly, he was a star of the predecessor of The Great White Way, or, you know, the earlier version of Broadway. And he was extraordinary. He must have been the Leonardo DiCaprio of his day. And he was so well known and so lauded that he was the wealthiest entertainer in the world.
Wow.
So fast forward, he passed away in 1951, but in the last decades of his life, he lost his vision. And he was so awestruck by how that had changed his life that he left the majority of his estate to the New York Community Trust to support people dealing with vision loss and blindness. That was millions of dollars in 1951.
Wow.
Today, we've given away tens of millions of dollars in grants to people, often people that are, for example, in settlement houses in northern Manhattan or the South Bronx, where 84% of the people will fail their eye exam.
We're able
to give free eye care and treatment to these folks because of David Warfield. So not only did he leave us that generous legacy in 1951, and we've given away tens of million dollars of grants in David's name, but now his fund has grown exponentially since 1950. So it just keeps compounding on itself and becoming more and more generous. And the extraordinary thing is, because of David Warfield's fund, the New York Community Trust is the largest contributor to disability in our region.
That's incredible.
Of that one fund. Now, here's the problem. I need a David Warfield fund that works on neurodiverse folks' disability, mm-hmm. one that works on physical disability, because we really do honor David and use it for visual disability.
Right.
So it just tells you what the power over time and the kinds of legacy contributions that people make. But it's a great story about David.
So let's talk about growing an ecosystem of donors in the community. Do you need a David, or do you need a community of donors to band together?
What makes a community foundation powerful is this idea of this kind of collective impact, right? Not only of over in any one moment, but over generations of collective impact. So we need a whole next generation of donors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have 12.4 million New Yorkers residing in the 8 counties that we serve. And they represent one of the most diverse places in the world. And we would love our donor base to look as rich and beautiful and diverse as New York City does today.
Yeah.
So we have work to do in that. And I think there's But that's the exciting part of being at the Trust right now, which is this opportunity to really expand the communities that look to the Trust as their anchor in philanthropy. So what does that look like? So we know, for example, that over time there have been all kinds of faith-based communities that have really looked to philanthropy. We have a great legacy of Jewish philanthropy in New York City, a lot of Catholic charity, and when we think about immigration, a lot of these faith-based institutions have been the bedrock of funding a lot of these migrant services. But one community we haven't done as much with is the Muslim community.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that there is a rich tradition of philanthropy and charity within the Muslim community, and we're really excited to be working with a group of sort of next generation Muslim donors who have had a fund at the New York Community Trust for a number of years and really looking at ways we can lean into being more supportive of their work and really growing that community's awareness of the New York Community Trust. So there's a million versions of that story.
Yeah.
We think it's also a critical moment to be leaning into the LGBTQ+ community. That AIDS crisis moment was a really galvanizing moment. So many people were lost during that time, but many of the people who survived that epidemic and continue to live in New York City think of this as a haven for them. It's a place where they found community. It's where they found activism and support around gay cause in the 80s. And we think a lot of those folks would love to leave a legacy for LGBTQ+ causes today and into the future. So just endless opportunities to grow and diversify the New York Community Trust.
Yeah. So we talked about number one being a permanent fund.
Right.
I think we're keeping people hanging for number two.
I know. We try to. So back in 1931, we had this wonderful woman donor who said, look, I'll leave you my funds, but I'm still alive. I want to do things now. And we came up with this idea of a thing that eventually became known as the Donor Advice Fund. So we're very proud to have pioneered that in 1931. Fast forward to today, probably one of the most popular philanthropic tools being deployed these days. We hold literally thousands of donor advice funds. Those are living donors who have put funds at the trust for charitable purpose right now. So people will give us a fund, we'll put funds into a donor advice fund at the trust, and then they will direct us to make grants. And we will do all kinds of due diligence on their grantees to make sure that nobody sends a check to the wrong place. Yeah. And then they have the joy of making gifts while they're alive and living. And that, you know, that's a huge way for us to get to know the donor community and to get, you know, people more engaged in some of the issues that we, the trust, are grant making. So when I say our grant making, I should be clear. So last year, we made about, and the year prior, about $200 million in grants. $50 million of those grants came from those permanent funds, like David mm-hmm. Warfield's fund, each of which have some, generally some, not all, I'd say about 70% have some restriction. I want to give them my grant, my funds, the earnings of my charitable bequest will go to injured, aging ballerinas.
So that intent is...
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty clear. And we have this extraordinary team at the Trust that weaves together all those funds and puts together a really impressive $50 million of grants each year. The remaining funds, the $150 million, go out of our donor advice funds. And so those are folks that about a little less than half of those funds will stay in the eight counties that we serve. But people may be making grants to their alma mater mm-hmm. or to their kids' prep school or wherever their charitable focus is. So that's the sort of two primary ways. And there's a million flavors within right. those that I will not bore you with. But those are the two primary ways that people
Amy,
put
you're
funds
never
here.
A bore. Never a bore. I want to go back to the donor advised fund a little bit. Those of you who have professional advisors may hear us refer to them as a DAF. A DAF is a great way to engage a room. If you're a family, if you're a multi-generation family, that could, going back to a values exercise or getting people involved or mm-hmm. setting a mission statement for a family, I think a DAF is a great way to do that. Do you have any fun stories where you've seen families roll up their sleeves together?
Oh, yeah. One of my current favorite stories is this amazing, and I'm going to be honest, it's at the Chicago Community Trust, our partners in Chicago. They're structured just like we are, just located in Illinois. But they have a wonderful Muslim family that came into wealth a little bit later in their life, and they created a fund that is a family fund. And they sit around the kitchen table and talk about how they're going to give their grants. But one thing that they've really decided to use their fund for is to broadening the tent for families like theirs, Muslim families who have a tradition of philanthropy, but really to use the Community Foundation as their partner in making those gifts. So it's a great example of a donor advice fund and a partnership with the Community Foundation to really expand the potential of what that family might do. Now, I come out of family philanthropy, so that means I worked at a family foundation that employed an executive director and a finance team and a grant man. And that's some families' favorite way to be. But what we know about family foundations is often when they get into the fourth or fifth generation, sometimes they lose the cohesiveness that kept a family foundation together. And again, a community foundation can be a great partner at that point because sometimes a family foundation can dissolve into a DAF and eventually maybe a permanent fund. So we like to think of ourselves as partners to all aspects of philanthropy. Mm. There are a million stories of New Yorkers that have used their DAFs in really generous and wonderful ways. There is a couple right now that I just can't say enough about. It's a husband and wife that have a very generous staff at the New York Community Trust, and their areas of focus have been around democracy and climate action. But when they saw the city struggling to come back from COVID, and they realized that part of what we were seeing on the streets was a manifestation of a mental health crisis in New York City in our homeless population, and what they saw was this sort of consistent churn of people, homeless folks, the most mentally ill of the homeless population, going into crisis, being put in an emergency room, stabilized, and then released back on the street, and just the perpetual cycle of that. And they were intrigued by a pilot that had been tried at Montefiore towards the end of the COVID period, where they were trying to interrupt this cycle. And this couple has taken it upon themselves to not only use their own funds, but to rally other donor advised fund holders and foundations to join them to do a 3-year, five-hospital expansion of this pilot to see if we can find better outcomes for the folks that we see struggling on the streets. And it's just an example, I think, of a donor using a donor advice fund in such a creative and expansive way.
Yeah, so generous, that root of generosity manifesting in the room, to quote you in an earlier conversation that we had. I also want to put my advisor hat on for a second and just delineate, because a DAF, a donor advised fund, is a tool where whoever's creating the DAF can really name it whatever they would like. They may not have the means to have a family foundation, which does take a considerable amount of wealth, but with the DAF, you can use it as a tool to operate in the same way. You can almost make it a mission and goals and marketing budget, if you will, for a family or for a couple or even an individual to open that DAF. Can you talk a little bit about the size of DAFs that you see, the New York Community Trust?
We see a huge range of size of DAFs. The couple I just mentioned have a significant DAF and make tens of millions of dollars of grants out of their DAF. But we often see, it's so interesting, Diane, some of the folks that I'm so struck by people's generosity, that people will start really modest, like the woman I spoke to who didn't have commas in her fund, literally with hundreds of dollars, and they will over time try to build that fund into being something more and more able to be more and more generous. But we try to have a fairly low barrier, because we really think the practice of philanthropy and understanding that community philanthropy is playing the long game. So the idea that someone might start modestly and build up from there, use all the resources that we bring to our donors at the New York Community Trust to really grow and expand their philanthropy, and really understand ways that it could be deployed, and to the point of making it a family project. What we often find is that donors will open up funds for their children to get them on the path of philanthropy, to have those kinds of value-driven conversations around what we care about as a family and how do you want that to manifest in your own philanthropy. So I do think they can be really instructive and really low barrier ways for people to get into the work of philanthropy. And, you know, look, I think everybody finds their path, and what we try to do is make our work at the Trust as flexible as possible so we can really meet donors where they are.
Yeah. And true or false, to have a family foundation takes significant means and a staff, like you had just mentioned before, whereas working with the New York Community Trust, you're getting that support embedded with the New York Community Trust.
Yeah, you get so much more bang for your buck, I will say. I feel a little guilty saying this coming out of family philanthropy. But look, again, I think family philanthropy can be playing many other kinds of roles for a family, like a shared project. And sometimes there's a sense of honor or sort of doing the work of the founder, and that's multi-generations of sort of feeling obligated. In the case of the Donor Advice Fund, it is true, you put so much more money to charitable purpose because you have so fewer operating costs related to the philanthropy. So, you know, they're different things, right? And we could talk a little bit about the fact that there have been some that have been critics of Donor Advice Funds because there's a fear that because there isn't a mandatory annual payout on a donor advised fund, that money can sit on the sidelines too long. We at the Trust try very hard never let that happen. We really do encourage donors to try to make grants at a minimum of every 3 years, and most are making grants every single year. So the goal is that that money should be kept active and active in philanthropy and doing good, especially coming out of the COVID moment, where I think we all saw such extraordinary need, and everybody needed to put their charitable dollars to work to the maximum impact.
I think it's fabulous that the New York Community Trust provides really a deep bench as far as infrastructure goes to help somebody on their planning journey, and they can start at a very low level and be part of a huge community.
Well, I'm pretty excited, because I think you just gave me an opening to say that we have revamped our whole sort of website, is going to be coming online around Memorial Day, and we think it will be even easier and more accessible for donors to use that. Our donors have access to a special donor portal where there's all kinds of learning and opportunities for diving into different grant making areas and learning about different approaches to philanthropy. We put out donor guides pretty much every month. We just did the Women's History Month donor guide and sort of talking about the charities that do a lot of great work with women and girls.
Awesome.
And all areas around advocacy and economic development and a whole area of and what we try to do is curate that down because of course in New York City there are tens of thousands of really great nonprofits and it's a little overwhelming for donors. So we really do try to curate it in such a way that it's accessible and easy for people to use.
And what's the website, Amy? You have to tell us.
Well, this is part of the big reveal that's going to come up is that we're going to actually be playing around with our URL.
Oh,
but just Google New York Community Trust and you'll find us.
Is the 212-686-0010 extension 363 number still
that,
good?
That's still working.
Okay.
And we'll continue to.
So you can call that number if you want to explore more on giving through the New York Community Trust. It's 212-686-0010. Extension 363. And I think Amy's answer to my prior question was true. Just gonna extract that.
Yeah. There is a whole lot. When you work with a 100-year-old institution, there's, you know, you can imagine there are a lot of systems and opportunities for us to modernize every day,
yes.
Right? And this year is a lot about us doing a lot of strategic planning and business planning to make sure that we're meeting the moment for this next century of philanthropy.
I
so
love that.
That's some of the updating you'll see on our website and some of the modalities we hope to make available to our donors and to our grant seekers because, you know, anytime we can save a minute of a grant seeker's time, that's a minute that goes to mission. And we don't want to encumber the people that are working so hard to do so much good in New York, making it easier for them to work with philanthropy is a big goal of ours.
Love that. Efficiency, infrastructure, intent, got all the tools. I love it. Any last thoughts for our listeners before we wind down?
Look, I just think that philanthropy sounds kind of highfalutin and not for everybody, but I think pretty much everybody in their lifetime has this moment where they feel like, I want to do something. And I think a community foundation is a place where you can do something and do something with great guidance and great community. You know, the root of the word of philanthropy is the love of man, right? And we find a lot of joy in working with our donors and our grantees, and we want it to be a joyful experience for them working with us. I mean, we are facing some challenging stuff in New York City. There is way more people that are going to sleep unhoused tonight than ever before. There's extraordinary hunger. There's all kinds of sort of lag effects of COVID that are affecting our performing arts sector. And obviously, we have some climate catastrophe looming that we all fear. But, you know, these things sound big and intractable, but when you find that they're like this wonderful couple that's dealing with this homeless this community of mentally ill folks that are in the homeless population, there are places that you can make a difference in someone's life. And that's what the Community Foundation is there for, to help you find that path.
Yeah.
So reach out to us, ask us questions, sit in on a webinar, just get involved. There's something for everybody at the Trust.
It's really allowing the private sector to flex, no matter the means that somebody has, but to help us lift up and support this beautiful city that we live in.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you so much, Amy. This was so much fun having you as a guest.
I loved it. Thank you.
I hope we get to do a follow-up episode, maybe not 100 years from now, but hopefully before 2 years goes by.
Great.
I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA SIPC.